Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Hello and welcome to another Record Celtic podcast. My name is Daniel Caught and I'm delighted, as ever, to be joined by Record Sports' Michael Gannon and Ben Banks. Guys, how are you both?
Good, thanks, chaps. Season's greetings.
Season's greetings in that the football's back and I think we're 3 days in, 60 in, sorry. Sort of a couple of rounds of games and we've already had our full season's filling, it seems, of decisions and things like that to talk about, so it's never quiet.
There's always plenty of greeting as well.
Before we actually come on to the fact football is officially back, the best football in the world, I think we can agree. We talked in recent pods, Mick, about the World Cup. Thought maybe best just to sum it up. Where do you stand on the Messi debate, the greatest ever?
I think so. Obviously, it's kind of, I was a wee bit young. I know I look about 150, but a wee bit young for the Maradona. But I think Messi, look at his CV now, it's absolutely bursting at the seams. Every single major honour. And the World Cup, he grabbed it with the scuff of the neck. It's Messi's World Cup, wasn't it? Uh-huh. He's had his moment. So I think he's the greatest ever. So I know, I love watching the old Maradona clips and all that stuff, and them scanning folk on ploughed fields and stuff like that, and he's the skill is off the chart. But you look at his consistency over 20 years, Messi, and what he's won, I think it stacks up to make him the greatest. But I think so.
Would you think, Ben?
For me, I'm slightly younger, so I've only, like, Maradona and Pele, they're sort of legends in this to me. Like, I've never really obviously seen any of them at all, and even Messi, like, I think I was only in Nappy still when Messi and Ronaldo were breaking onto the scene. So
bloody I'm sure that Jesus, Ben, it's too bad, my God.
I don't want he's going too bad. So it's a bit odd for me sort of seeing this guy who you've sort of watched from the Barcelona Academy and things like that, and sort of probably the first player in my generation that you've actually been able to chart his full journey up until this point. And it just seems like the perfect ending. I know it's sort of emerged in the last couple of days that he's probably going to sign on and play for PSG for the next couple of seasons or so. But I think it almost feels like the ending of an era properly, with Ronaldo going to Saudi Arabia and Messi winning the World Cup. It feels like that sort of story has now sort of come to its conclusion a wee bit. So it's kind of bittersweet. It's nice to see that happy ending, but you're also sad that it's over.
Absolutely. I think it was a good World Cup, but obviously the Premiership is back, and that's where our business lies today. Since we last did a Celtic podcast, Mick, maybe just quickly reference the game at Aberdeen. I know it was a good few days ago now, but Callum McGregor, as ever, worth his weight in gold. Absolutely brilliant goal. A game that Celtic really dominated, but, you know, just finding that breakthrough.
Yeah, I mean, there's certain games when teams score late on and there's a sense they get away with one. But I don't think that was the case at Pittodrie. I think Celtic, I mean, they earned their win. I mean, they battered the door for long enough. It just needed that wee bit of magic from Callum McGregor. I think sometimes it's forgotten about how good a player Callum McGregor is. I think he's been such a good Celtic captain. I think he's been such an impressive figure as a captain. I think they knew he was going to be, but I think he's even actually surprised a few of us just how good he's been as a captain in terms of his role in the dressing room, his influence, the new signings and all that stuff. I mean, he's been terrific, but on the pitch as well, I mean, there's fewer that are better than him. I mean, he's a real leader on the park in terms of the way he plays. He takes tempo of the game. His passing is phenomenal. I think he had more passes himself than the entire Aberdeen team at Pittodrie. Mm-hmm. And he pops up with an absolutely sensational winner as well. I mean, the guy's worth his weight in gold, isn't he?
Absolutely. And look, as I say, Benny, Celtic obviously needed to wait for that late goal, but I don't want to be too harsh on Aberdeen, but Aberdeen were really poor, I thought. I thought just no try to hide from it. They were just backs to the wall, behind the bus. I don't know, it was a bit embarrassing, I thought.
It's one of them. Like, Jim Goodwin is obviously come to Aberdeen from St Mirren. I think you can get away with that performance if you're the St Mirren manager. Doesn't necessarily mean they're going to be all too happy about it, but you can somewhat understand it, I think, slightly more, as opposed to Aberdeen where, and Hearts, Hibs, where those fans are going to be right on top of you and they're going to be expecting you to, even if you go out and get beat 3-1, 4-1, potentially not in the fashion they then got beaten Tuesday night either. But in terms of that, just, you know, sitting in and almost like defending the defeat, almost like it felt inevitable, even in that last 10 minutes or so. Celtic have got a real knack of scoring late goals under Ange Postecoglou. So the further you sit back to the point where you're almost like sort of in your own penalty box for the most of it, then I just don't get what's to be gained out of that. I mean, you get a point, but would you actually get, like, in terms of team, would you learn about Aberdeen from that? Because it's not how they play against anybody else. I think they're one of the highest scorers at home in the league, and it totally limited all their attacking options. And they showed in Tuesday against Rangers that they have those attacking options. But again, as soon as it maybe got a bit scary towards the end of the match, they were looking to hold on to those 3 points. Again, they just dropped back, and the same thing happened. They went and got beat. So I think it's really disappointing from an Aberdeen perspective, and it's maybe been a bit of a sobering week, I'd say, for Jim Goodwin, in terms of maybe the expectations and demands of sort of what it means to sort of be an Aberdeen manager in these type of games at Pittodrie.
And Rick, obviously, I'm conscious we're not on the Aberdeen podcast, but 33 shots to one at the weekend doesn't really get much more dominant than that, does it?
No, totally. But listen, I've got a wee bit of sympathy for Aberdeen and Jim Goodwin. I mean, Jim took the baton after that one, and I can get it. It just smacked to me of a manager that had too long to think about one game. And we used to see it with Scotland games, and Scotland managers would drive themselves barmy over like 3 months plotting one game and coming out with wacky formations and weird ideas. And I remember Gordon Strachan playing one at the back against Gibraltar and losing a goal, that kind of stuff. Just the 4-5-0s and all those kind of things. A manager that's got too much time in his hands isn't always a good thing. I think Jim maybe overthought it slightly. First game back as well. I mean, Celtic, I don't think Celtic have really hit the ground running as such since they came back. I mean, they're just two dominant displays, could have a battle of chances, but they're clearly a bit rusty.
Mm-hmm.
They're playing pretty well, but I don't think they're quite at their full capacity yet since the break. And I think Aberdeen overthought it. It backfired. They get a point at that, you think, fair enough, not the most pretty in the world, but, and they got within 3 minutes, but it was a bit of a strange one. I think it's a lesson learned for Jim Goodwin and Aberdeen. In terms of Celtic, some similar aspects of both performances against Livingston as well, creating a lot of chances but not taking them. But as I say, there's ways to win matches, even late wins. Like if they're struggling, they're scratching about, and like, I mean, even the other night against Livingston, it wasn't exactly they were kind of hanging on and not playing particularly well, just not creating chances, not taking chances. I think somebody is going to be in the end of a doon at some point soon with Celtic. I think that's the kind of feeling. I think they are trending in the right direction, to use a kind of a modern phrase. And I think somebody's going to get it. That's the kind of sense I get from Celtic right now.
But on the Livingston game then, it obviously threw up quite a lot of talking points. The one that I'd maybe start with, Lee Labada, thought he was absolutely brilliant again last night. Since he joined Celtic now, he's got 24 goals and 13 assists in less than 18 months. I think he's only 21, 20?
21, yeah.
21. I mean, for a player of that age, Ben, and for the kind of nominal fee that he cost, he's been an incredible signing.
I mean, when you speak about Celtic's forwards, the ones that always get mentioned are Jota, Kyogo, Giakoumakis more recently, but Abada just seems to be the one who sort of goes about his job quietly and just gets on with it type thing. He's never the headline grabber, really. I think that's going to change, but when you really boil it down, like, to come to a foreign country, like, don't really speak the language, and come over here and make an instant impact like that and be so consistent in a position that's prone for inconsistency, I think it speaks a lot about his ability and perhaps more his temperament and things like that as well, that he's been able to handle all those sort of off-the-pitch challenges that are, I suppose, natural for young guys, especially ones in his type of shoes, coming over to a massive institution of a football club like Celtic. And, I mean, you've seen his play last night. I mean, he sets up Obelai, he'd stick it in his own net, he does sort of the same sort of drill for Kyogo, and he's, I'm sure we'll go into it, but he scores a goal of sorts in the second half. So it just seems to be the reliable figure. And even in the Aberdeen game, I thought that it was a really slow first half at Pittodrie, but when he came on, it seemed to light the game up a wee bit, and he seems to have that impact 9 games out of 10. So he's been a really impressive signing. And when you can sort of, when we look back at Andrew Postecoglou's time at Celtic and years to come from now, I think Lee Labada will be looked as one of the best, especially given the fact that, you know, if he continues in this form, his valuation as well is going to soar through the roof.
It's almost inevitable, Mick, that, you know, there'll be admiring glances from the Premier League and elsewhere in Europe, you'd have thought.
I've absolutely no doubt. I think he is the next one that's going to make some serious money for Celtic. I think they will flip him relatively quickly. I mean, I don't know. I don't think this January, maybe not even this summer, but I wouldn't be surprised if it was as quick as that, because he's a young lad, and he's 21 years old. He's got an absolutely abundance of potential, and he's also very, very handy in the now as well. There'll be a queue of clubs looking at him. I've no doubt about it. But he's not the biggest physically, but he's rapid, quick, and he's got end product. And that's the thing that teams want the most, the end product. You look at his goals and assists. It's absolutely priceless. So I've absolutely no doubt that he will be the one that makes some serious money for Celtic at some point.
Mm-hmm. I thought it was really important as well, considering Jota has looked a little bit, understandably, but a little bit rusty since Celtic came back, that Abada last night picked up, you know, the responsibility. And Ben, you touched on it.
But can't cash right enough, Jota. You can't knock his tash.
That's true.
Yeah, he's a bit rusty, but he's got that kind of Bob Carroll-G's thing going on here.
He's got some barnet as well.
Sorry, Ben, that's a bit of a battle with two of
you. I was going to say, I think Tom Selleck and Friends is a bit as far back as I go when it comes to moustaches and things like that.
No one's had a tash since the 80s anyway, so I don't think you've ever seen a tash in the flesh, have you?
I haven't. I think Michael Doyle at Aki's when he was rolling about with one during the November and the World Cup break was about as close as to one as I've got in my time. But they're a distant memory for this generation.
Well, Abada obviously got on the score sheet in the crucial 2-1 win, but as you mentioned, Ben, he probably should have had a second goal. We've all just taken a quick look at it before we started recording. It's a difficult one. A lot of Celtic fans on social media were kind of up in arms about it and seemed to think that he'd been kind of outdone of another strike. But I mean, Mick, it's so many conflicting rules about offside.
I'm glad you went to ask me this question and then passed over to Mick, so I'm quite happy to
I wanted this one.
I think, listen, the offside rule, I don't want to sound like an old man again, but if the guy's offside, the ball's hooked in, he's offside, position he's offside. Now there's first phase, second phase, active, non-active. From what I can gather is that Abada's come back, he's moving back from offside position, the ball's hooked across. The ball's not getting towards him at any point in that stage. He's not interfering in play. He's not near the defender. The defender gets a contact on the ball. The ball goes back at his path. He's then sticks the ball in the back of the net. The argument is that by the defender touching that ball back towards his own goal, it becomes, then he's active and he's onside and it should be a goal. But I think it's come down to, I think the rule book says that if it's the intent of the defender, if he intends to play that ball back, he then would make Abada onside. And if he doesn't intend it, then he's active in the first phase. And so it's all about intent, really. So the officials have decided that was it Morgan Boys?
Yeah.
Didn't mean to do that and hit the ball back away into the path of Abada. So therefore, it became offside. I think that's how the rule works. unfortunately, I don't have an IFAB registered degree, which you need to know the rules of the game of football now. But I think, that's the interpretation. So if the referee and the officials in the VAR think that Boys didn't mean to do that, and I could see why they would think that, because he kind of stumbles, doesn't he? He kind of stumbles and hits his head and spins back. So, but listen, unless you can climb into the guy's head and work out what he's thinking at that very moment, you don't know what intent. Intent is interpretation, what you think he intended to do. And they thought he didn't intend to do that, therefore it was offside. But it's one of these ones. Remember that thing on the internet years ago about the dress that was blue or green, not stuff? I never argued with all of it. You're going to argue with this one as well. It's another one of these decisions that's about intent, and you can't prove intent.
See, for me, though, it's like talking about the World Cup at the start of this. I can't really remember a VAR decision outside of maybe a couple of the World Cup that were more than 30 seconds a minute. Again, it's meant to be an offside call, and there's teething problems with this. We were warned of that, but again, it's taking 4 or 5 minutes again, you know, that in the stands, people are wondering what's going on and things like that. Managers are wondering what's going on. So regardless, I mean, you can have the debate of was it an offside, was it not an offside? I think in any case, the speed of decisions needs to be getting better. And I know that's not an overnight fix, but again, we're back talking about VAR and how slow it is, the problems with it and things like that. What's the interpretation of this? What's the interpretation of that? And I think Davey Martindale was speaking about it, that VAR's there to assist the referee. It's not there to referee. And I think the sooner it gets back to that, the better, because I think, for me, it's just taking too long, and it is taking away from the spectacle a wee bit, and it does become a wee bit a theatre that people are beginning to get a bit tired of.
See, I don't have a problem with the VAR, and even that instance, it will speed up. And plus, I think the first few months and maybe seasons, referees are a wee bit using as a bit of a safety net for checking things. I mean, it really is only there for clear and obvious errors. So that one the other night, that offside call is a call that would be made normally by the linesman and the referee together, and they decide straight away. And it's an interpretation call. So something they feel at the time in their gut or what they think it is, and they call it. I don't have a problem going checking it, because that one is such a weird one. I don't have a problem going saying, well, I might want another look at that one, because I'm going in my gut, but I don't mind that I'm going to look at that one, so I can understand it. It's the ones that are blatantly obvious and they're still going to check. You think, well, do you know what? I mean, have a bit of confidence in your own abilities. They're grade one referees that have done a lot of time in the game to get where they are. I like to see referees in a bit more confidence in their own abilities to make decisions, rather than having to go, right, we need to go and check it, or I need to go and check it. And the guys in the VAR room, unless it's a clear and obvious mistake, if it's down to interpretation, allow the referee, unless he wants a look, allow the referee to make that decision. If he thinks at the time, unless it's absolutely the wrong decision, don't flag it up for the VAR. I think the World Cup did that, actually. I think the World Cup, they let them make decisions a bit more in league games, and certainly in Scotland in the first few months. But it's the first few months of this. We knew it was going to be take a bit of time to get used to it. And get back confidence with the whole setup, and it'll come. I think it will come. It'll be better in the long run once we get used to it. But I like to see officials have a bit of belief in themselves to make big calls, and the guys in the VAR to say, right, leave them to it. They know what they're doing. Right. Unless it's blatantly obvious.
For me, it's the frustrating aspect of it is that it's the inconsistency. Still, it's like you think back to the Burnaby handball against Dundee United, where he was facing the other way. And he concedes a penalty for that. And you look around the rest of the Premiership, there's, you know, more obvious handballs than that aren't even, you know, referenced. VAR don't even look at it. And it just becomes really frustrating. It's almost, in my opinion, VAR is always making it more frustrating if you're a fan. You know what I mean? Because you've got it there, but it's often not checked. And it's thrown up for me more problems than answers so far. But it's still early days, I guess. Left you both standing.
No, indeed. These ones, especially the handball ones now, they're down to interpretation. I mean, so the referee might see something some way, and the guy in the VAR room see it differently. And on the pitch, the different referees would offer different awards for different decisions. So it's hard to kind of compare these ones. I mean, the Burnley ones, I thought, was a shocker. The Matt O'Reilly one was actually against Ross County, it was actually worse. I mean, having a look at that in the tape and then still come to that conclusion, I thought was bizarre. But again, it's about the rule book has got so convoluted as well, it's made it difficult for these guys. And now every time the ball hits an arm in a box, people think it's a penalty kick. Mm-hmm. And this natural position and all that stuff, your natural position when you're playing football, your arms are flying about all the place. You can't, there's not much you can do about it.
I know.
I'd rather we get back to, I'm feeling like an old fuddy duddy. It was a handball, but it looked like one. Like, if somebody handled the ball in the box, it was all about intent. Did they mean it? And usually you could tell with a guy's face, a defender's face. I mean, they usually standing with his face, like a hand in a cookie jar with a face full of chocolate. It looked guilty. I mean, that is the referee's to judge it on. It's a handball because it looks like a handball. And I've gone away from that and to look at the minutiae and pouring over every freeze frame. And I still picture doesn't look, like it does in real life, because you can make any still picture look however you like, really.
No.
I just would like it to maybe mind a bit of common sense and get back to using your gut. I mean, even looking at it in camera, you can still go, nah, he didn't mean that. Well, that's not, his arm can't be anywhere else but there. I just would like, wish the officials would use a bit of common sense, that's all.
Mm-hmm. No, definitely. We mentioned earlier on that Ange Postecoglou wasn't particularly over the moon with the performance last night against Livingston. Some of his quotes after the game, he seemed really kind of peeved. Obviously saying it was important to win, the performance wasn't our best. We did the things we wanted to, but I was disappointed. We've had a lot of success playing that way, so when it doesn't happen, I get frustrated because there's no reason we shouldn't do it. And he seemed to be really annoyed about getting into good areas, but no one there to kind of finish it off. And that, to me, intrigues me more about the Giakoumakis situation, because we know he's been linked with a move away from Celtic. He's obviously wants a new contract, apparently. But he only got 8 minutes last night, Ben. And, I mean, is it fair to say it looks like the writing is on the wall for him?
I don't know. I don't know how much you can read into sort of we spoke before, there's an Instagram post of him putting a sand timer up and things. I don't know how much you can read any of these things. The only thing I would say is that, like, Ange Postecoglou brings on Giakoumakis off the bench with 10 minutes to go and things that he's saying after the game, oh, I was quite disappointed with aspects of this performance. Yet Celtic still won pretty comfortably. The scoreline doesn't show that, but they still won extremely comfortably. And I think that's a pretty ominous sign for the rest of, especially teams sort of in Livingston type bracket, that, you know, Celtic can be playing in low gears and still pretty much close to victory. But I mean, on Giakoumakis, like, I think for a striker like him, when his numbers have been as good, and it looks like Kyogo sort of is the sort of number one front man at the minute, I suppose it's natural that after a season of playing sort of Champions League football in some capacity as well, that he maybe wants to be a number one man somewhere. That doesn't necessarily mean he's going to go in January, doesn't even necessarily mean he's going to go in the summer, but I think eventually you want to be playing more than half an hour here, half an hour there, 10 minutes here, 10 minutes there. Yeah. So it's certainly one to keep an eye on, because I would imagine that even though competition is fierce, he's probably going to want to be playing a lot more than he is just now.
I just feel that I really hope that Celtic can work this out and keep Giakoumakis, because he's at this level, he's a proven goal scorer. He's been an excellent signing for Celtic. He's the complete polar opposite to Kyogo in stellar play. And if he has to be sold, I just think it's going to be so hard to replace him.
Yes and no. I said before, I think he's a good player. I think he certainly plays pretty well when he's in the team, with the option he gives them. But listen, we don't see him in training every day. Ange Postecoglou sees him every day in training. So he's in a better position to make a judgment on a weekly basis on whether or not he can start games. For all we know, it's not impressive in training or whatever. So you have to trust the manager on that one. I think he's a very useful, he's a goal scorer, so it's always useful to have a goal scorer. But at the same time, Giakoumakis has to be careful, because he's not indisposable. Because, I mean, he has scored a barrel of goals, but if you're playing up front for Celtic, you do tend to score a lot of goals.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's just the number of chances that Celtic create. I mean, they're creating 25 to 30 chances a game in the penalty. I'm telling you, I find someone myself to put one or two of them away.
That's no going nuts here.
A retired fat goalkeeper. So I think he has to be a wee bit careful, Giakoumakis, in finding his position. Whether or not he's been moaning about not playing, I wouldn't surprise him if he did, because players want to play and he has got a great record. And I think he's a useful player to have. But this idea that he can't be replaced, I don't quite buy that either. And I suspect that Celtic will get a few lined up. We'd argue that they have got somebody lined up for January already to come in and compete for the striking roles. So it's very much up to Giakoumakis. I think he's a good player and very useful. His record's terrific. It's easy for us now to say we'll give him a run in the team, because I think Kyogo scored that night, but again, he's not quite been himself. He scored 12 goals this season.
Yeah,
it's pretty good. But he's not quite been as sharp in front of goal. Missed a few chances against Aberdeen as well, didn't he? So you think, Giakoumakis is worth the running team. I suspect that Postecoglou is wanting Kyogo to play through this period and get his touch back and get his sharpness back, which is why he's getting a lot of game time. Add in the fact there's a lot of uncertainty surrounding Jackie Marcus's future. So why would you chuck him in if you think he's in it for the off in January? You want to play your main man back into form? Not that he's off form as such, but you know what I mean? He's just not quite...
12 goals is pretty good for somebody off form. That
exactly, exactly, exactly. But he's, you know what I'm saying? But he does miss. He missed a few chances at Pittodrie. He was quite quiet second half the other night as well. So I can understand manager wanting to play him into better form, especially if there is a bit of kind of tension behind the scenes with Jackie Marcus.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. One other player that I really wanted to kind of give a pat in the back to, and I'm really, he's really grown in me since he's established himself, is Carl Starfelt. Now, I know he spent a lot of time out injured last season, but when he first arrived at Celtic, you remember the bizarre own goal? Was it against Alkmaar in the Europa League qualifiers? It was like something at the circus. And he really didn't look the part. But see now, at Pittodrie, I thought he was outstanding. Really good again last night. And I know Jens has had, you know, did well when he's come in, but for me, Starfelt has got to start every big game alongside Carter Vickers. I just think he reads the game so well.
Yeah, he seems to be the sort of reliable man alongside Cameron Carter Vickers now. Like Maurice Jens, I think, has actually done okay. So when he's came in, it'll be interesting to sort of see what the plan for the long-term centre-back futures are at Celtic now, that sort of they've got the new boy Yuki Kobayashi coming in. What does that mean for Stephen Welsh and different things like that? But in terms of Carl Starfelt, I think it's Celtic have got a pretty defined back, that sort of middle pairing now with Cameron Carter-Vickers, who has got that spot in the team for, I think, as long as he wants it, such as his performances have been in Carl Starfelt, has slowly grown into it, I think. So I think some of the criticism at the start was a bit unjust. There was a few, you know, questionable moments and things like that, but I think he's overall playing most games. You know, he is quite key in passing out from the back and things like that, and sort of starting how Celtic want to play if they're wanting to build up the left. So I think some of the criticism has been a bit unjust, and certainly in the last sort of 6 months of his performances, when he's been fit, he's certainly looked the part, and I think he's probably silenced some doubters with these performances, especially this season when he's been fit, because he has come in sort of cold turkey a wee bit after being out injured for a while, and he hasn't looked like he's missed a day.
Would you, are you a fan, Mick?
Yeah, I think he's a class act. He came in last season, start of last season, he chucked in at the deep end, had a few European moments. I think he's a guy, he has got the odd moment in him. I think occasionally he can have these kind of little moments when he causes a few hearts to flutter. But a lot of good centre-halves have that as well. Remember guys like Dedrick Boyata was one. He's a great one for having these kind of bomb scare moments, didn't he, as well? Good big player in his day, but he had a few moments in him as well. Maybe not Virgil van Dijk. He was too busy just kind of smoking cigars and playing his slippers. But Starfelt, I think, has been a class act. I think he's been really good. And by the end of last season, he was terrific. Unfortunate to get injured in the summer, then come back into the game against Rangers. So it's been a frustrating first half of the first chunk of the season for him. But now he's back, I expect him to stay there. I like Maurice Jens as well. I think he's a decent player. He'll get games here and there. But I think Starfield's a main man, and he's a good, solid defender. I don't think there's an issue there. I think him and Carter Vickers have a good relationship as well. So they were the first choice pairing, and the other guys will slot in when needed. But he's been a good signing for Celtic.
And you, Ben, you mentioned that obviously Celtic's two latest recruits, Alistair Johnson and Yuki Kobayashi, were paraded before the game, before kickoff last night. Ange Postecoglou has hinted at more signings coming in. We've obviously talked about the striker position, which, you know, you'd imagine he's looking at. Is there anybody else that you think maybe he'd do with freshening up?
I think striker's sort of the main one, probably, if Jackie Marcus goes. I think if he doesn't, then there's not really much need to. You've got, obviously, Kyogo and Jackie Marcus there. I think Maida was initially signed as like a striker, but he's played mainly out on the flanks. He's certainly got the capability to play there, and the World Cup certainly showed that he's more than capable of handling himself up there, and they've got plenty of options on the flanks. Maybe a physical defensive midfielder, like something a bit different. They've not really seen Oliver Abildgaard at all since he came in. They've not really got like a, otherwise it's a proper old man in the pub type shout, but the Victor Wanyama type, I don't really like saying that, but in terms of that sort of physical presence in there, but again, I think you're nitpicking a wee bit. I don't think a lot will sort of get done itself, and I think it's a testament to their recruitment that they have got sort of two guys in so quickly. They've obviously known what they want well in advance. I think Andrew Postecoglou spoke about that before, that he sort of plans a couple of windows in advance and things like that, and that certainly showed last year. They brought in, obviously, Maeda Hitate and Ediguchi before January. They've brought in these two guys now before January, so I think that is a massive help, because already by the time you get to the sort of start of January for that big run of games, you've already got two guys there who've been in the building for a few weeks, got to know the club and things like that, and are pretty much ready to hit the ground running if they're given the opportunity. So I think it's more fine-tuning for Celtic rather than, you know, having to do anything drastic. The only way that'll happen is if, you know, players go the other way.
And it's really refreshing, Mike, to be in a position where Celtic, they appear to have become really agile in the transfer market, really quick at getting transfers done when that wasn't always the case previously. And you look at the Juranovic situation, you know, every day he's been linked to, you know, likes of Roma, Barcelona, you know, Man United, Chelsea. Celtic can just sit back and say, look, we've already got his replacement in, basically. And, you know, they can just let the bidding war commence if there is to be one. I think it's fair to say Celtic deserve praise for their recent work in the transfer market.
No, but it's not just in that position either. I think they've got that in a few positions. I think we mentioned Abada earlier. We've got Haksabanovic that's come in. I think he's a good player as well. I think you'll see the best of him second half of the season. I think Celtic could be interesting in January. I think it'll depend on departures, I think. But I think Celtic have got contingency plans for a lot of positions. I mean, I think you look at Juranovic and Giakoumakis probably going to go in January. But you could see big bids for... You wouldn't be surprised a big bid coming for Abada. You wouldn't be surprised a big bid coming for Carter Vickers. I think Jota, maybe injury, because injuries first half of the season might make January too soon for him, but these guys will all have people looking at them, and it could be interesting. And I don't think that the manager is scared to sell. In fact, given what he said before at the AGM about being nimble in the market and not getting too attached to heroes, I think he will sell. Mm-hmm. And I think he has an idea of who he can bring in to replace these guys. Some are already in the building, like you say, you mentioned Arthur Johnson. He'll be competing with Tony Ralston for that right back role. Another striker potentially on the way if Giakoumakis goes. So it could be a really interesting window, all against the backdrop of a title race. Because mm-hmm. I think they will make moves if need be. It could be a lot happening in both directions.
Excuse my ignorance here. I probably should have did this research before we started. But you might know, Mick, can Johnston and Kobayashi play before January?
No.
No, they can't, can they?
No, they can only register on January the 1st.
Aye. Well, the games coming up between now and then are a couple of big ones. Obviously, Celtic have got St Johnstone at home on Christmas Eve, followed by Hibs away on the 28th, and then, of course, the big showdown at Ibrox on the 2nd. I mean, you would really expect full points between now and the 2nd of January, wouldn't you?
I think we looked last night doing the game. I think if you include the Livingston game last night, seven of Celtic's next 10, including that one, are all at Celtic Park. So, I mean, it's bookended with a home game against Livingston, then another home game against Livingston at the start of February. So, they've obviously got a couple of tricky trips in there, one notable one. But, yeah, I think this run is going to be... We're going to see Celtic slowly motor through the gears, especially at home, where teams are... I think that... have a bit of the fear factor going to Celtic Park and things like that, if we come at it a wee bit, then we're going to be on the end of a sore one. So I think this period is going to be really interesting for Celtic, that they have got that sort of, for the first, I can't really remember the last time Celtic had a clean run of domestic games like this. I think in that run there's three or four games as well at home on the bounce. So yeah, they've obviously got the derby to contend with, but I think outside that, then this is a no game is easy, as the old cliche goes, but it's certainly got the makings of a very promising run for Celtic. And when you've already won all of your league games at bar one away from home, then yeah, it could be a very interesting period.
And you'd be hoping, Mick, that the full squad will be up to speed by the time the trip to Ibrox comes?
You'd think so. So I think there's signs of rust in the first couple of games, but that was understandable, I guess. And every team is feeling that as well. I touched on it earlier. I do think they've got another gear to find. A couple of tricky games in the build-up, especially Easter Road's been an interesting one. But if you're in that dressing room at Celtic Park, you're thinking this is a huge opportunity to really put the foot down in the title race. I mean, if they can get through the next two games with 6 points, then avoid defeat at Ibrox, that's a huge advantage in the turn of the year, isn't it? Like you say, a big chunk of home games on the horizon as well. They could really be in a really dominant position coming into the new year. Almost insurmountable position, you've got to think, if they're not at that stage. I don't think they're quite at that stage already. There's only 15, 16 games gone or 17 games gone. So not quite there yet. But this next kind of fortnight, 3 weeks, could really stamp their authority in this division. I think we'd get them towards the line. Mm-hmm. So it'll be interesting. I think there's another level to come from them, from what we've seen so far.
Whatever you think about Scottish football, it is really boring. Guys, I could do this all day, but I think that brings us to the end of today's Record Celtic podcast. I should say to both of you, have a good Christmas when it comes.
And yourself, chaps. Hope Santa's good to you.
Yeah, absolutely. And I should say for everyone listening, you can find us at record_sport on Twitter, at daily_record_sport on Instagram as well. And for everyone listening, have a good Christmas. Cheers.